after the whirlwind of Holy Week, with all of its tension and drama, we find ourselves almost in the same way it started, with the disciples in the upper room. However much has changed, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Jesus' mother have found the tomb empty. Yet one of the disciples who traveled with Jesus was unwilling to believe what happened. It is as if almost this disciple's mind cannot comprehend that Jesus had risen from the tomb. It is a bit of a tragedy that we hear this story right after Easter, when folks think it's okay to skip out on Sunday. But out of all of the characters in the post-resurrection world of John's gospel, no one has left a stronger mark on the imagination of Western Christians than Thomas. We love him because somehow he has transformed himself into the incredulous non-believer who hides behind a thin veil of believing Christianity. He is the one who needs all the facts, is logical, and requires that little extra proof to believe. He is our annoying uncle with the internet theology. He is the child who grew up in church but refuses to return. He is even that one friend from church whom God raptured during the pandemic. Throughout the history of Christian theology, there is account after account as why Thomas doubts, each reflecting the skeptical impulses of the time they were written. For example, in the early church, the average doubter questioned whether God was eternal, divine, and human. Yet somehow he could die and still be God resurrected. Thomas bore the brunt of those Trinitarian arguments. Later in medieval times, scholars sought to debate whether the resurrection was both metaphysical and analytically understandable. Medieval Thomas bore the same doubts as those in medieval times. Post-Enlightenment theologians used the doubting Thomas story to frame him as a rational, empirical, and logical doubter, much like the leading thinkers of that time. Today, we might be tempted to fashion our version of doubting Thomas to fit our needs, and we would have the historical precedent to do something like that. But the point of doubting Thomas goes beyond our skeptical impulses into something much deeper. We have turned to Thomas as a convenient plot device for the clergy to answer the inconvenient and hard to answer questions in the Christian community. We whip him out once a year and parade him in the lectionary after Easter Sunday, when the congregation is still dizzy from Holy Week, only to put him back on the shelf once it is all over. We duct tape some wishy-washy words at the back of a sermon and wish the listener more faith until next year. But we owe it to ourselves to dig a little deeper about the story of Thomas the twin. What is a constant fixture in the entire gospel account is this. The answer to doubt we find in John's story is not who Thomas is, but who God is. The real point of John's story is a tale about God coming to us, wherever we might be. John's answer to doubt begins at the door. We start to see his answer by reading about Jesus, who opens the door to the upper room, because we have a Jesus who goes through a locked door. Again, Jesus is determined to reach a doubting skeptic whom no one can convince. But again, Jesus refuses to allow a heavy door change or a deadbolt lock to block him from reaching the one who believes in him less. The Gospel of John also tells us that Jesus walks up to Thomas, yet Thomas fails to recognize him, which is a bit odd. I imagine Jesus had the same carpenter hands, rode calloused feet, and maybe even the same kind smile that appeared on his face before his death and resurrection. This tells me that, like Thomas, we might not recognize Jesus in our lives, even when he is 2 inches from us. It just might be the moment of great peace or brutal honesty, or even when we ponder the brutal violence that engulfs this world, that we might realize that we have never been alone, that Jesus has always been with us, and that we have always been found. It is the good news that Jesus comes to us in different seasons of our lives in various ways, and his appearance will undoubtedly change. We will not always recognize Jesus, particularly when hardships have given us many reasons to doubt. One moment he may come to us in full splendor and glory, like in Easter, dressed in golden robes and flanked by the angels of heaven, calling us to celebrate the richness of our faith. The next day he may come to us dressed as a beggar, reminding us that the love we profess, a love that saves, is vulnerable and costly. The glory that awaits us is humble in texture and well-worn in feel. And still, in other times, he may come to us in the clothes of those we know and are close to very intimately, and yet we might not expect to see the risen Christ in them. Whatever his appearance might be, we will know that it is him. Whether he is inside those golden clothes of his, or street faded rags, or in a worn clergy short, we will find not a carefully argued response to our inquiring faith, but a surprising proclamation of peace. A peace that you can reach and touch, and a love that is stronger than death itself. In the wonder of his wounds, he will find us, and we will find him. Amen.